Welcome to,
or welcome back to,
Dark Room Reviews. My name is Ginger.
And I'm Matt.
This week's episode, we're going to be continuing, not continuing with our review of The Conjuring Universe. I know, a little M. Night Shyamalan plot twist action for you. This week, we're going to be helping with the COVID winter blues. We're going to be offering more of an insider knowledge of current movies, or as we like to call it, yes!
Or pass.
Yeah. Hope you enjoy our top picks and bottom of the garbage stack movies.
So let's dive right in.
Well, who are we? You know who we are. I'm the yes queen of this duo.
And if you haven't figured the other half out, I'm the pass. Just,
yeah, that's
we'll move that one to
Matt's
the side.
That's Eeyore, if you will.
Pardonnez-moi.
So we're just going to have a fun little full list of movies that we've compiled that we saw and we really love, highly recommend that you see them. We also have kind of a middle meh section that you could kind of take it or leave it, but we're going to set you up to not be disappointed for them.
And we're not going to do a full in-depth review. We're just going to give you our straight recommendations, kind of little tidbits about the movie, why we like it, why we think it's interesting, and especially why you guys should check them out.
And, of course, what you're all here for is you want to hear us trash on some really shitty horror movies.
Yeah.
Right? So, of course, we're going to have a compiled list.
We have plenty.
Yeah. So, of course, we're going to have a compiled list of movies you can just straight up miss. You can just not see them. Or see them if you really, really, really just want to see, you know, how they wasted millions and millions of dollars.
We'll tell you which ones those are. Stay tuned. All right, so where do you want to start off this conversation? Anything that's sticking to your mind? Do you want to get right into the dumpster fire? Do you want to do,
No, I want to ease into it a little bit. Okay.
All right.
I kind of want to talk about the meh movies first.
Okay.
I think they're the ones that you can, like, now, these aren't terrible. They're not terrible. They have, like, a lot of them have, like, a lot of redeeming qualities. They're just like...
Just to give you guys an idea, we're not quite yas about them. But we're not going to pass them to the side. These are things that you can watch if and when you have friends in your home.
Yeah.
Or if you're illegally doing that right now. That's fine, too.
we don't
judge.
No, it's not fine. We don't condone that.
We don't. We are judging.
Yeah. We're definitely judging.
But when you are able to do that, these would be something that if someone hasn't seen it, you could watch it, gauge their reaction, but you know, it's gonna be our middle down the line. It's watchable. It's not our favorite.
It's also just nothing to write home about. Now, one of these for sure is probably going to surprise, like, our sort of regular friends and listeners. There's one on here that I know is gonna seem like we're really gonna like it, but...
It didn't quite do it for us.
Yeah, it didn't sit.
Let's start with kind of the obvious ones. The ones we've kind of, one we especially already talked about is actually Antebellum.
Yeah. Now, we've already talked about this. We're not going to get into it too much.
You want to go to our full review?
Yeah.
Essentially, it just didn't go the way we wanted it to.
Yeah, I thought it could have been, I've said this before, I'll say it again. I thought it had like a really cool premise, but I thought they were going to go really in depth with it, which was the obvious thing. Go ham with it. You should have gone
weird.
Yeah, you should have leaned right into it. You should have taken the main character should have had to like go back in time or something really, really, really fucked up and strange. Because otherwise, it was meh. Because then it turns out to be meh.
It has turned to be into a really weird thriller.
Yeah, it's just a thriller.
Movie.
It's fine. It's just a kidnapping movie. It's literally just a kidnapping movie.
Not quite a horror movie. So keep that in mind.
Not quite a horror. Yeah.
So that one's our first of our. Meh.
Yeah. The next one that I'm going to go into is one that kind of was a rage during...
during the first wave of the pandemic.
Was that really a rage during the first wave of the pandemic?
I think it came out just before.
Oh, man. That is... Wow. Okay. I'm having a... I feel like it's so much older, but...
I don't actually think it was that old, though.
So, the movie that we're talking about is Bird Box.
Sandra Bullock making her comeback. Okay, it was 2018.
Okay, so thank God.
Pre-pandemic.
I'm not crazy. It was pre-pandemic.
Yeah.
So, yeah, the movie we're talking about is Bird Box. It got a lot of attention at the time because people posted about it on the various social media, whatever you have and follow. People were nonstop with the memes and, like, yeah, I get it. things happen like that, right? Like, at the beginning of the pandemic, it was all about Tiger King, right? People were all about Tiger King. And this Bird Box was 2018's Tiger King.
It was the thing that took Netflix by storm, and everyone wanted to watch the shit out of it.
And do I think it was, like, a totally, like, satisfactory movie? Definitely satisfactory. But the acting was pretty good.
It's got a lot of good things going for it, but once you've kind of figured out the premise,
it
loses kind of all horror.
It's really easy to figure out kind of, like, what's happening, where they're going with it. And to contrast, not to talk about it too much, but you were looking up the book that it's based off of.
I prefer the ending in the book over the movie.
Right.
I didn't read the book, but basically, I'm going to spoil it here. If you do want to watch it, just skip this part.
Yeah.
At the end of the movie, this is a bit of a spoiler, they end up finding a blind, or an institute for the blind that has basically now rescued people from this crazy thing with Bird Box, because, you know, they can't look at it.
You just can't look at it. That's the whole thing.
In the movie, they advertise it as an institute for the blind. In the book, it's a little bit more dark.
Yeah.
It's actually people that only survived because they gouged out their eyeballs and basically blinded themselves.
Right.
And just kind of learned to cope with being blind. It wasn't as happy as, like, oh, it's just normal people who were genetically blind.
Yeah.
Or lost vision. No, no, no.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, this was supposed to be, like, pure apocalyptic people, like, ripped out their eyeballs.
Right.
Anyways, it's just a little bit more on, you know, something that I wouldn't necessarily say is bad, but once you've kind of figured it out, it's that kind of movie. Same thing with, like, A Quiet Place is a similar like that.
Yep.
But I find that they do a better job of building the suspense. Anyways, that's a separate movie.
Yes.
But Bird Box, I think, just for the hype, easy watch, good watch. It's got some good scares in there.
Mm-hmm.
But once you've got it, you've kind of figured it out.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So
exactly. So I think if we're going to move down the list in our kind of meh movies, is probably Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. It was fine.
Again, similar to Bird Box, it's fine.
Yeah.
But they almost, contrary to Bird Box, because they can't show you anything. It's all, the whole premise of it is you don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
They show you too much in Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. They kind of try to pull, like, an It type of thing, where they're trying to make things very scary.
Yeah.
But it just kind of turned into the kind of weird novel.
It was very childlike.
It got kind of child horror.
Like, yeah.
Granted, if you have families and you have, like, maybe older teens, that might be a good pick for you.
Yeah, that might be a good one. It definitely is more family movie to me. Like, it screams family movie. Whereas,
well, family horror. You don't want to show this to necessarily anyone.
No. I know.
They do show a lot. Like, it
horror.
Is a little.
I think
it
it's
is
rated PG, though. I don't think it's rated very high. Honestly, it's not.
There's nothing crazy that happens in that movie.
Yeah.
But the problem is they try to show you too much, but then because of that, you've already seen it, so it becomes less scary.
And if I'm not mistaken, they did try to market it as something that was scarier.
More scary, yeah.
And it certainly is not. So that's just a heads up. Yeah, sure, go watch it. It's cute.
And especially if you, I believe this is also based off of books, right?
Yes, it was.
Especially if you know the books, it's a fairly accurate recount. And they did a good job of trying to, you know, put those horrors that are in your head onto the film. I do think they did a good job there.
For a nostalgia perspective, I think it's fun to watch. But I don't think it's anything more than that.
No.
That's my little piece on it.
Now, that relates very closely to the next one, which is The Nun. The Noon.
The Noon.
We will do a full review, so we won't spoil too much on it.
No.
We do have things we like about this movie, but it does still kind of fall into the category of,
oh, it's way over the top.
It's way over the top. It's not really based on anything. It's kind of just like a blockbuster horror spirit haunting movie.
Yes.
But if you're in the mood for big budget, easy watching kind of horror movies, this definitely does it way better than Annabelle.
Oh yeah.
So I would definitely say this one would be a better pick for that.
Yeah. I kind of describe The Nun as, like, do you just want to, like, see some freaky demon shit? Then watch The Nun.
Then watch The Nun.
Yeah.
Not really based entirely in reality.
No.
Very loose facts, but
there's one little fact.
There's actually two facts.
Yeah. That we particularly enjoy. But that's it.
That's about it.
And
we're not
going to talk about it right now. We're going to get into it when we do our full Nun review. But it's really just, like,
two. Also, we tiny now can find things. It now. I think it's on Netflix now, or did it get taken away? I can't remember. But
I don't know.
If you can find it and you're interested, this one's actually one of the ones that's edging into a yas territory.
Yeah, it's edging there, but it's silly. Let's call a spade a spade. Like, it's quite silly.
So the last one, which might be a little surprising, because this is actually the newest one on the list.
Yeah.
This one was actually recommended to us.
Yeah, from a good friend who he generally likes, I would say at least a lot of the same movies that I like, and we really hate a lot of the same movies, which is nice. It's good to have a person like that.
Yeah.
This movie that was recommended was Saint Maud.
Now, we don't hate it.
No.
It's, again, similar to The Nun. It's getting into our yas category.
I thought it was good. Don't get me wrong. Like, I thought it was better than The Nun. I can't even say it's the same quality as The Nun. It's way, way better than The Nun. However, where Saint Maud falls for me is that it does the thing. Now, I'm going to relate it to this, but it's not this. Don't get it twisted. It's kind of like The Turning, okay? In the sense that the whole time leading up to it, you're questioning, I'm not going to spoil it, but you're questioning whether the main character,
those things are really happening.
Yeah, is actually happening to her, or if she's just crazy. Now, I won't ruin...
It doesn't do it as badly as The Turning, like, nowhere near as bad.
No, I won't ruin the ending, but I just felt like, I was like, well, yeah, I don't know. I kind of figured it out before we got to the
unlike The Turning, where you don't really know what the fuck's going on until they kind of leave you hanging and you had no idea. Yeah. This one almost gave it to you a little too much in advance.
Yeah.
Like, you kind of pieced it together beforehand, and you kind of wait, like, we were waiting for, like, an additional twist.
Yes.
But that was just kind of the whole thing, like, oh.
Well, yeah.
Okay, yeah, I got that, like, an hour in.
Right.
So.
But other than that, I thought it was really well done. Like, I thought the premise was really interesting.
It's definitely weird. It's got that nice mix of weird horror. Like,
yes.
It is good, and it's
an interesting watch. And it kept me watching it. Like, I was entertained, and I wanted to see the end of it. But, yeah, I don't know. I just thought it was going to be, I guess, leading in the direction that I was wanting it to go in, but I had sort of figured it out about an hour in. And I was like, oh, I guess.
So do you want to jump into our yas movies?
Yas queen.
All right, so these are movies that are like, if you haven't seen them, you better be like renting everything off of on demand. I don't care how much it costs you, you're watching these movies.
Right? So three of them I'm going to run through super quickly because we have talked about them.
Yeah.
Kind of one of them, especially ad nauseum. But okay, so highly recommend if you haven't seen it yet, what the heck are you doing? Please watch Autopsy of Jane Doe. It's freaking fantastic. The story is
We are going to do a review on
it. So good.
Eventually.
Yes. It deserves a whole review in and of itself. It's got a really awesome twist, and not a crappy M. Night Shyamalan twist. It's got a good twist. And it's got something that is, you could solve it with all the pieces in front of you, but you might not also solve it, and that's the fun part. But it's not leading you down this path of where the twist is impossible. I don't like movies where you're like, what? How?
Yeah. How would anyone figure this out?
Where did you get that
out from
there? What, that's silly. So no, it's got a really awesome mix. Watch it.
Yeah. It's got a bit of everything. It's like horror meets haunting meets like ritualistic meets everything.
Yes. So good. The next one I'm going to just talk about really quick is Get Out. It's...
If you haven't seen it.
Yeah. See it.
What are you doing?
Yeah. If you haven't seen it, see it. It will not disappoint.
Mm-hmm.
It is so, so, so well done. And I think, like, there's a couple of points during that movie where you can very much feel the true terror that the main character is going through at the time. He's essentially trapped in his own body. And that's all I'm going to say. But for whatever reason, you are feeling it with him. It's so well done.
Yeah.
So watch it if you haven't watched it. Again, I can't imagine who hasn't watched it, but maybe you haven't. I don't know. So watch it.
So the next one we have, which, again, shameless plug to another episode, Hereditary. I mean, it is weird. That's the one thing I'm going to play against it is if you're not into those weird, new, kind of more artsy horror movies.
But here's why I suggest it. If you can get past the artsiness of it, if that's not your thing, it is scary.
Yeah.
It is actually scary. There's something really, really, really unsettling about it. And that's everything. We've talked about this. But that's everything from the soundtrack that they used, to the way that it's shot, to the way that it is acted, it's unsettling. To
the way that they tell the story, too.
Yeah, it's really, really unsettling, and part of the story will lull you into a false sense of security, thinking that it's one thing and really it's something else. And they pull that off really, really well with Hereditary.
Same thing, along the same lines, another Ari Aster classic, Midsommar.
Yes.
Again, not as well done as Hereditary. It is a little more weird. It's weirder. Which, again, I don't know if you know that's possible, but it is.
Yeah, it's certainly weirder. But I still think it has all kinds of really freaky parts. The fact that the whole thing takes place in broad daylight.
Yeah, basically.
Is really cool. Because you feel, again, you feel that, like, that dread and that terror set in. Where you're just like, you know that the main characters are totally fucked. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, at a certain point, you're like, oh, man. But then you also don't know how it's going to go. No, but then you also kind of don't know how it's going to end. You think it might end a certain way, and it leads down, like, a weird but satisfying ending, I'll say.
Yeah.
Yes.
Next one we have, again, another, it's kind of related to another episode we did, is Dr. Sleep.
Now, this one we have not done a full review on, so we can talk, but like, a little bit more
we
about
did do
this
a
one.
Review on The Shining.
Yes.
They are related.
Exactly.
Shocking.
So, this one is in my, oh my gosh, definitely, definitely, definitely see this if you are a Shining fan.
They did a lot of really cool things relating to The Shining, mm-hmm. Especially trying to tie characters, trying to tie locations, tying original Shining storylines that weren't actually done in the movie.
And the book. The book, you mean.
No, it wasn't the movie?
No. Like...
The boiler room scene.
Yeah, I suppose. I thought what you're talking about is how they... So I find they actually go the other way more. So I find Dr. Sleep calls back more to Stanley Kubrick's Shining more than Stephen King's Shining.
Yes, I agree, but I like how they tied like the original ending of The Shining with tying it into the Stanley Kubrick thing.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Definitely.
Anyways, I'm sorry for anyone that ruined it, but if you hadn't saw that coming, the boiler room explodes. but they do a really good job of, like, kind of paying homage to the classic Stanley Kubrick film.
Yes.
In the settings, in kind of the weird things that happen there.
Yeah.
Now, the overall storyline of Dr. Sleep, not the biggest fan. The production's really good.
Yeah.
Again, it is still a little Stephen King cheesy for me.
Yeah, it's a little cheesy. But you'll like it if you are a fan of The Shining.
And
that's what I'll
say. Be prepared, it is long.
Yeah,
it is a long movie, so if you're not into a long...
It's well over 2 hours.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of an endeavor, but if you are a Shining fan, definitely...
It's worth a watch.
Take a watch.
Definitely.
Last one in our big kind of, like, you must see is the new one that we just saw called Host.
Host. That one took me by surprise. Again, it was a recommendation from a friend, and... I don't know, I didn't think that much of it going into it. I felt like, this is going to be okay. But the basic premise of Host is that it is set during COVID pandemic times. Yeah, it's super, super real. And a group of friends are having a Zoom chat, like a Zoom party, basically. And they also decide that they're going to have a seance at the same time.
Like a Zoom seance.
A Zoom seance.
Modern twist on an old
exactly.
classic.
Exactly. I love the modern twist. I love that it is relevant for today. It also, like, I don't know. For me, that's a very scary feeling because, I expressed to you while we watched that film that, like, I would possibly entertain something like that, but only because we live together and normally we also have a roommate here, too. So there's three of us in this house. You don't feel alone.
Well,
in our,
four if you count George.
And four because I definitely count George. Like, I don't feel alone in our apartment, right?
Yep.
But some of the girls in this movie were living by themselves. And all I could say to that was, hell no. Are you kidding me? I don't think I would have ever been roped into that. Like, there were points in my life where I lived completely on my own with no roommates. And, like, I think back to that, and I'd be like, oh my god, no. Sitting there in the dark with a candle lit doing a seance, it doesn't matter if you believe something is going to happen or not, you're still going to freak yourself out. Any little pin drop of a sound, you'd be just on edge. You wouldn't be able to sleep that night.
Now, I like this movie because it does bring callbacks of, like, Paranormal Activity, like, good Paranormal yes. Activity, as well as kind of elaborating on the Unfriended kind of series, as opposed to the Skype call. It's now a Zoom call, again, more modern. And the nice little tidbit to it, too, is it is exactly 45 minutes, which is the same length of a Zoom call, like the maximum Zoom length call.
I loved it. I thought it was so, so, so clever. Like, the length was really short, but that was perfect. I thought that there was a couple, we're not going to give away too much, but there are some really big scares in the movie. And a couple of the scenes, it gives you little glimpses so that you're satisfied, but it never fully shows you a being, an entity, a something. I'll leave it at that.
Yeah, they do give you very quick moments.
Yeah.
They do a lot of, too, of like, you know, the internet was lagging, and you kind of like, it's frozen stills or kind of pixelated, so.
But I love that they're using that to their advantage. It's a, for me, it's the perfect blend of like a modern twist on your Paranormal Activity slash The Blair Witch Project, because it is showing you just enough to be scared and to let your imagination, like, run wild, and it doesn't show you cheesy silliness.
Yeah.
Watch it.
Go see it.
Yeah.
Now, we'll just go through a couple other ones here that are in our Yas category. Mm-hmm. We won't delve into them. We'll just let you know that they are good, easy watch. Definitely would recommend them.
Yeah, worth a watch.
Worth a watch. Kind of most recently, The Invisible Man.
Yeah.
For a while, I don't know if anyone else experienced this. It was like the only movie you could see during the pandemic.
Yeah.
So I think we saw it about three times because literally we could not see anything else.
Yeah, they just, it just, like, new movies were coming out, which I totally understand. Theaters were
closed, and then the only thing we could do was go to the drive-in, and literally at every drive-in option
was the Invisible Man. So we saw it three times. So we saw it, like, three times. I think we went to the drive-in, like, three times and saw it three times.
And oddly enough, fun fact, about a year ago now, this is probably the time that we saw it.
The first time. Because
it was, we first saw it in an actual theater before the world collapsed.
Yeah, exactly. It's so well done. It's a great remake of the old movie. The old movie was really cheesy, and this is, like, this is truly suspenseful.
This is a nice, like, psychological thriller meets horror.
Yeah, I like the ending, too. I think the ending is, like, fresh and new.
Yep.
So, watch it. It's worth it. The acting is awesome. Yeah. Starring my best friend.
Yeah, your best friend. She got to fly her best friend.
Yeah.
Elizabeth Moss.
Yeah, Elizabeth Moss.
If you're watching our podcast, listening to our podcast, you say hi.
I'll say, hey, I flew that one time to Toronto.
Yeah. Fun fact, it's not necessarily on our list, but I would like to include it. The guy who plays the dick husband person that she runs away from, who's in charge of everything, he actually plays the, what the fuck's his name? He plays the kid in the Hill House series. He also plays the guy who's also the asshole in Bly Manor.
Yes, yes.
I can't remember his name right now, but it's the same guy. Also, if you haven't seen Hill House...
Oh my god, watch Hill House.
Just binge the whole thing.
Yeah.
Bly Manor, you could take or leave. It is based on Turning of the Screw, which, don't worry, we haven't forgot about The Turning.
Yeah.
We cannot trash The Turning enough in our series.
I don't even know if it's possible to have a bad list and then not include The Turning.
It's going
to
be every one of our lists. Even though
even though if it got a full review, I don't care. I'm going to say it. I'll say it again. It is dumpster fire.
Yeah. But just to give you an idea, some of the characterizations are similar to that of The Turning of the Screw.
Yes.
I do think Bly Manor does it a lot better.
Way better.
Ending not my favorite. But, for sure, Hill House. I really enjoyed that series.
Oh, yeah. Hill House I enjoyed.
But, coming back to the original, Invisible Man, Hill House, Bly Manor, all recommended, and the guy's in all three. Better watch that.
Nice little tie-in there.
Right? I did my best.
Okay, so, another one that I think it gets, maybe it just gets better in my mind because it's been a little while since we watched it, but I liked the Gretel and Hansel movie when it came
out. I never saw it when it came out. I only saw it when we watched it.
Right.
I actually didn't mind it. It's a nice level of, like, weird meets kind of horror.
Meets classic fairy tale.
Meets classic fairy tale with, like, a hint of horror and a bit of weird artsy twist.
Yeah. Now, with every, like, horror movie, you do have to suspend some belief. And I do think that whenever you're going to cross horror mixed with fairy tale, you were suspending a little bit more belief. But I thought it was a really, like, nice expansion on the old story.
I will say the ending was nowhere near where I thought it was going.
No, I was surprised by the ending.
I'm not mad at it. Like, it,
no?
Unlike other times that we've reviewed things, we're like, that was nowhere where we were going to take that movie.
Yeah.
This one, I was like, oh.
Interesting.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Didn't see that coming. Okay. It's not like a out of left field necessarily, but it's also not like. Anyways, if you're interested, you can watch it. It is a little artsy. It is a little on the long side.
But I still think it's worth the watch.
Really well done, other than that.
Yeah. Another one that I know that we've suggested before, but again, oh my gosh, what are you doing not seeing it? Is Us.
Yeah, we just rewatched that fairly recently. And you know what? Like, I still enjoy it each time. There's still some scenes that you're like, oh, like you're. Not cringing watching it, but it's just like, you're like, oh, I know it's coming. Mm-hmm. I know it's coming. Oh, there it is. And it does have a good twist at the end if you haven't seen it.
It does. It does. It has a really good twist. It obviously has a lot of social commentary, which is fun. Like, it makes you want to have a discussion about it afterwards. And
your girlfriend's in it, too.
Oh, yeah.
She's in that one as well. She's in that
one, too. Oh, yeah. Hello.
Need to get all Liz over here.
Yeah.
The next one we have, again, mostly just because of the remake version of this.
Yeah.
We do enjoy this movie. We've actually watched it a couple times.
It's silliness, but it's good.
It's silliness, but they did everything right. They kind of, it hits all of the horror, like, check boxes.
Yeah. It's a Stephen King classic.
Pet Sematary.
Now, okay, for anyone who has seen the original is bad. Like, it is cheesy and not in a good way. Well, it's classic Stephen King. There was a time period there where even though his stories are pretty entertaining to read, they just didn't translate well to screen. Oh my God, some of them are just so oddly bad. And Pet Sematary was definitely one of those movies. Now, the remake, I think, is actually pretty good.
I think it's still got a level of cheese.
It's still... Well,
yeah, I think they did the best that they could considering the original source material.
Yeah, considering the source material. You can only do so well.
They did make a few edits. There's a few characters that died in the original that don't die in this version and vice versa.
Yeah.
They changed up a little bit and there's some interesting changes. And I think they did a little bit better with the tech, obviously.
Yes.
They do play that up a bit. But overall, like, it was a nice mix of paying homage to the original. They still kept the original Ramon song.
Yeah, yeah.
At the end.
Yeah.
And some cool twists in it.
Yes.
And they do show you a lot more. So if you're not the type of person that likes kind of like the blood and gore killing, it's not cheesy.
No.
Like the original.
It's gory.
It's more gory.
Yeah. But I thought it was like a really cool update. And I thought like for once it's kind of a watchable classic Stephen King that wasn't done by Stanley Kubrick. And I think that's really, I don't know.
And it's easy watching.
It's different. It doesn't, you know what? Classic Stephen King movies don't usually make it on my list of like, oh yeah, definitely see it. I'm usually like,
hey, we actually have one more Stephen King.
Yes, we do and we don't. We have
It.
Yes.
But only the first one.
It Chapter 1 certainly makes it into our yes list. But
you can throw away the second one.
Oh, It Chapter 2. We'll get to that when we talk about our crapshoots.
Yeah, but if you're interested in the two Stephen King that we have here, It and Pet Sematary, both great remakes.
Definitely.
We'll talk about It Chapter 2 just in a second.
Yeah.
The next two that we have are actually in the Conjuring universe.
And I think we can talk about these kind of like together.
We'll talk about them together and we won't give you a ton of info on them again, as you know.
Those
are coming.
Yeah, and we're doing a whole Conjuring Universe review, which of course you've been listening to, right? I mean, obviously. Hello.
If not, you have some time. Right. We bought you a whole week.
Yeah.
So the next two that we have are Annabelle Comes Home,
mm-hmm.
not the original Annabelle, and The Curse of La Llorona.
Yeah. Now, they're both kind of what I like to consider side tangents within the Conjuring Universe. They both don't really star or even feature Ed of Lorraine Warren, but they're happening kind of like in conjunction with or at the same time with the general storyline, if that makes sense. And there's some connection.
And there's at least one degree of separation of how they're related.
Yeah.
We'll get into that more. Of course, Annabelle Comes Home. I wonder which one that one is.
Right.
But especially when you get to The Curse of La Llorona, it's interesting because it doesn't really tie in until towards the end.
Yeah.
But they are, again, somewhat based in reality, very, if so, very loosely.
Very loosely.
And that's what we enjoy about them is, like, they're really high production quality. They got some good scares. They've got some cool things. And on the side of it, they do take a little bit out of what people think has generally happened to them.
Yeah.
And that's kind of interesting.
They're worth seeing if you are a Conjuring Universe fan. I would say the one that I would have to place a little bit higher than the other is probably The Curse of La Llorona.
Yeah, because that was actually based more on
a true
real air quote facts.
Yeah, and I find it pretty scary. Like, it's got some good scares in it.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah.
This one I'll let you talk about. That is Suspiria, because I have actually not seen this movie.
Okay.
I know. I should take our own advice here.
You definitely need to take my advice. I think this might be the only one. No, there's one other one on the list that you haven't seen.
Yes.
So, Suspiria is fantastic. I love the original, and the remake that it got, I actually have not seen the remake that they did. But again, this has been suggested to us like 1,000 times over.
No.
So it kind of made our list. It's slightly unique in that I have seen the original, and I would say watch the original any day. Like, I'm recommending it to you. Watch it. It's good. However, it's not really what we've talked about with this list. This list isn't like classic movies, if you can tell. It's newer movies. It's movies that have come out within the last 5 years. However, the remake of Suspiria has come out within the last 5 years, and I'm going to say, watch it, even without me seeing it.
Yeah.
Like, watch it because they're, from what has been told to me, because I got a pretty good, like, mouth-to-mouth review on this one from a friend, and it sounds like it is very, very, very close to the source material.
Wow.
Yeah. It's gory, though. That's its whole thing. It's more gory. It's not your, it's not like a supernatural thing at all.
Now, not sure if you guys heard that. That was the cat snoring.
I was wondering if that was going to, it might come through. We'll
see. You might hear it.
It's a pretty good mic that we've got here.
Anyways, just in case you're wondering what that random noise was.
Yeah, it was George. He was snoring. He's the loudest breather in the world.
Well, he wouldn't do well in a quiet place.
Oh, what a segue.
Oh, great segues.
But so
that's the next one. Easy watching. Now, it is Emily Blunt and John Krasinski.
Mm-hmm.
They both star in it, and I think John Krasinski directs it as well.
Yes.
Not bad. I'm actually, like, pleasantly surprised.
I really liked it. I thought it was really well done. I thought the acting was really good.
Acting's really good. Again, similar to Bird Box, it shows you too much, and it kind of gets a little predictable.
Yes.
Again,
Better than Bird Box for me, though.
Better than Bird Box. There's a few more. It's a little bit more anxiety-inducing because of it actually being quiet.
Physically, like, it's quiet.
The movie is quiet. You don't know when it's going to happen. Those jump scares just get you a little bit more.
Mm-hmm. It's nice. They have a nice mood set up in that one.
Yeah,
for sure.
And it's definitely a lot more tragic.
Yes.
Than Bird Box.
Yeah, like, it gets you, for sure.
Like, they get you at the beginning and they get you at the end.
Yep.
So,
it's
good.
Watch. Watch it if you haven't seen it. It's worth it. Watch it.
The next one is
the Halloween remake.
Yeah. Oh, and now he's screwing up the chair.
Oh my gosh. George.
We're recording. Jesus. Every episode. There's always a George appearance in
every
episode.
He always makes a cameo in our episodes. So,
back to the Halloween remake.
So it's not even, I don't know why I have it down as a remake. It's not really a remake. It's actually a continuation of the story.
It is, yes.
It's really good. It's a nice tie-up to the entire story. It closes the whole story because, oh my god, that story needs to be closed and it needs to be ended. However, what I love about it is that it's got some really cool old callbacks. Obviously, it has Jamie Lee Curtis, which she does a fantastic job in this movie.
Again, she's the only one that really should have been carried through anyways from the original.
Exactly. And then they did it a lot of justice. Like, it wasn't your typical sequel, and it wasn't, so, I don't know if you remember this, but in the early 2000s, Halloween kind of had a bit of a resurgence with, like, Halloween H2O and
Halloween,
Jamie Lee
like
Curtis
1 through
was in that
8
too.
Or whatever.
Yeah, and they were bad. They were so bad. They were practically unwatchable. But this one is good. It finally did the series justice.
And I like, they actually kind of have, like, two parallel stories going through.
Yes.
They have kind of Jamie Lee Curtis's, like, flashbacks and, not really flashbacks, but, like, her experiences and why she's acting the way she is.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's also things happening to other people in the town, and they kind of have those two things going on. It's good.
Yeah.
And then it does kind of all culminate at the end, so... Yeah. It's got a little bit more complexity to it than the original Halloween, but it wraps it all up very nicely.
And you know, if you were holding off seeing it because you've probably seen 1,000 other Halloween sequels and remakes and prequels and all these things, watch
the original, then watch this one. Yeah. You could basically almost do it as like a, this is what happened at the time, and this is like a 30 years later type of thing.
Exactly. Like, it is actually that good that I would say, like, watch them as bookends. They're really good.
Yeah. Next one that has... bit of a interesting twist to it is Split.
Yeah. Speaking of M. Night Shyamalan, a little callback from our intro. So, when I saw this movie in the theater, I had no idea that it was related to another one of Shyamalan's movies.
Mm.
Because it wasn't marketed that way.
Yeah.
And that can be good or bad. So if you haven't seen the first potential movie that it's related to, you could be like, well, what am I watching at the end here? Because the end has a big twist and a big, big reveal. And that's the only, so that's the only downfall that I have. I'm still not putting this in a no category. I still think the movie is really, really, really good.
Still in the yas
category. Oh, it's definitely a yas queen, like, category, but... I just think that, like, I maybe perhaps like it a little bit more because I saw the movie that it was a sequel to.
Yeah.
And that gave me, like, the benefit of being like, oh my gosh, I totally forgot about that storyline from that movie and that character.
Yeah.
But that's essentially what they are. So they are, there are three movies now that are technically all related.
Yep.
But they're not marketed that way. It's not like, oh, Split 1, Split 2, Split 3. Like, it's not...
Yeah, they're all separate movies that all have happened to kind of culminate together.
Yes. So, just to get into... I'm not going to ruin it too much, but the basic premise of Split is that you see these three girls who are kidnapped and taken to an unknown location. They're definitely being held against their will, and there is... a main character who's holding them hostage, and you can tell early on that he has DID. He has dissociative identity disorder, formerly known as split personality disorder, hence the name Split.
Yeah.
So, and
they're kind of playing off, he has different identities that come up, and they're trying to basically get ways out to kind of, you know, coerce his different personalities to kind of at least get one of them to release them and let them go.
And one of his personalities is a little kid.
Yeah.
So the girls are kind of trying to use the, you know, the relationship that they form with the little kid personality to get on his good side and let them out. Now, that's all I'm going to say. I'm not going to say much more from there because the twist is, like, the ending is... unbelievable, and it's, you really don't see it coming, but I think in a good way.
No.
So watch it, it's worth seeing, but keep in mind, like, you can just do your own research, but keep in mind it is technically, it's a standalone movie, but it is technically related to two other M. Night Shyamalan movies.
So the last two that we have Blair Witch, not to be confused with the Blair Witch Project,
right?
And Quidja.
Yeah.
Related to our other episode. The Ouija Origin of Evil. So, I haven't seen Ouija Origin of Evil.
Yeah, so I'll talk about that one really, really briefly. It is the prequel to Ouija. Ouija was a god-awful movie. Don't even bother. It didn't even make our list because it's just kind of crappy. It's just your typical trying to be scary paranormal movie that shows you way, way too much, and it's not freaky at all. Ouija Origin of Evil, now they did it right. That is a freaky movie.
Hmm.
And I can't even say too much about it. It's literally just, it's your good classic supernatural horror.
Yeah.
Watch it. It's worth it. It's, and again, if you held back because you saw Ouija and you were like, that was fucking terrible, I'm definitely not seeing Ouija Origin of Evil, watch it. You can even watch it as a standalone movie. It's really, really good.
And then Blair Witch?
Blair Witch, I have a definite soft spot for. I have a soft spot for the Blair Witch Project, so I was probably already bound to like Blair Witch. But I thought, again, just like the Halloween, just like the way that we talked about Halloween, this was the perfect follow-up. This is exactly what I wanted.
Yeah.
It showed you just the tiniest glimpse of the Blair Witch, like monster or being or whatever the heck it is. Mm-hmm. Insert thing here.
And giving it a bit more of a backstory, too.
It gave it a bit more of a backstory, but still stayed in that, the story that's laid out in the Blair Witch Project, in the original. Except that this time, it definitely has higher production values. It's got, you know, it certainly has a budget.
Yep.
The acting is good. Like, I don't have any issue with it.
Yeah, it had that more, like, bigger budget documentary, not, like, student documentary feel.
Yeah, not a student documentary feel. It didn't have the shaky camera feel, even though you are seeing it from the perspective of handheld cameras. But it's high quality, right? Yeah. So it's not that sort of Blair Witch, like, make you vomit camera thing.
Not Cloverfield.
No, not at all. And I really liked the ending. What did you think of the ending on that one?
I'm not even really sure if I remember it. It's been so long since I've seen it.
They end up getting chased into the same... So the same house that makes an appearance in the Blair Witch Project...
Oh, yeah, they get chased into that house. ...is at
the end of the Blair Witch. And the group of kids end up getting, like, chased into this house. And that's when you get the glimpse of the Blair Witch, if you will.
Yeah, yeah.
Remember that?
I like that. It's a nice kind of homage to the original.
Yeah, it was good. I liked it. I liked that it was an homage to the original, but yet it was original all at the same time.
Yeah.
Worth a watch.
So those are our Yas movies.
Yas queen. Now,
we made you wait like 40 minutes to figure out what we don't like, and I know you guys just enjoy us trash-talking things.
Yeah, so but here we go.
Here we are. So we're going to start with the obvious. We're going to mention it 3 times total in this whole thing. The turning.
The turning. It's just the garbage.
Light it on fire.
Light it on fire. The garbage. It's garbage fire. It is hot, soupy garbage. It is so terrible because for so many reasons. We'll say it again 1,000 times. Like, it had production values.
Yes.
And it had great actors.
Yeah.
And it had money and a budget and a wonderful set and everything. Cinematography.
Halfway to, you know, 2/3 away in, it just went to shit.
Well, the direction. The direction was so poor.
And when you look at the backstory of the movie, like, they had so many people directing it, so many people producing it, and no one could make it work.
Yeah.
And it feels that way.
I have a feeling that even the actors in the movie probably don't know what actually happens at the end of the movie. Like, they're like, I don't know. I have a feeling that they'd be like...
Yeah, we acted that out, but we also acted out, like, 20 other scenes.
Yeah, like, I have a feeling that even they would feel disjointed. Like, it's very... Well, yeah, it's the thing that I say the same about this movie all the time. It just feels like they ran out of battery power, and they were like, whoa, oh, okay, our cameras just died. You want to call it quits? You want to say we're good? And we shot enough of this movie, right?
Yeah, we'll let people figure out what happens.
Yeah, they'll
That's
just come
what
to their,
feels like.
They'll just come to their own conclusion. It's all good.
Now,
it's so weird.
Again, I'm going to turn this into a Yas. Mm-hmm. If you are interested in The Turn of the Screw,
yes,
which is what this movie is based off of,
uh-huh,
I also don't recommend reading it because it is terribly slow.
It's
going to take you like... It's a novella, but it's going to take you like 4 years to read.
Yeah.
It's very dense to read, but... If you want to read, not read, if you want to watch something...
If you want to know the subject matter.
Kind of the general subject matter on it, watch Bly Manor.
Yes.
Preferably watch Hill House first.
Yep.
They are related, and they kind of share the same actors. But Bly Manor, the secondary season to Hill House
basically is
The Turn of the Screw with... For the first half, and then it gets segued into its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of it is based off of The Turn of the Screw.
Absolutely.
Even in, like, a little bit of it.
Yeah.
They take their... Again, they do take their own spin on it, where they kind of have their own oddities with it, with the whole Bly Manor thing.
Yes.
But I do like that, because, again, unlike The Turning, they didn't just kind of fucking give up. They made it their own.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, at least Bly Manor has an idea and it has an identity and they go for it, you know? Like, I don't maybe love the last episode. It doesn't really tickle my fancy. It's very, like,
it's very good feelsy.
Yeah.
No, I'm sorry. Like, creepy feels. Mansion. I want everyone to be dead.
Yeah.
Everyone
like
died.
Yeah. Like, I just want everybody to die. It's a creepy, scary thing.
We'll probably
thing.
Do a Hill House Bly Manor thing
yeah,
in a little bit.
Yeah. We've talked about, we've toyed around with doing that. But anyway, it's.
Don't watch The Turning. Ultimate end of the story.
Yeah.
Just don't watch it.
Watch Bly Manor. That's way better.
Way better. Next one, which was a bit interesting because I actually worked at the studio that did the music for this movie.
Mm-hmm.
And that was The Boy, which I actually think we were. When I was there, that was a project that was coming down the line. I didn't get to work on it, but It was definitely, we were demoing for a bunch of stuff at the time. But
so, my criticisms for this one are remarkably similar to The Turning.
Same.
Great production values, fantastic acting, good
basically,
scenery.
Up until the point where, you know,
yeah.
the twist or the, you know,
reveal.
The reveal is.
The end reveal.
That fucking lost me. I was
yeah.
like, as soon as it happened, I'm like, I'm done.
Oh,
it's garbage
but
now.
But when they finally reveal, it's a crap out. You're just like,
really?
Really?
I sat through an hour of this?
Yeah.
And now there's a sequel to it. I'm like, how the fuck did you make that a sequel?
Yeah, I don't even know how you make that a sequel.
So
but
it is so bad, I'm going to ruin it for you right now.
Yeah,
so
you don't see it.
So
it's,
don't watch it.
Because it's so bad.
So the main premise of The Boy is kind of similar to Annabelle. It's essentially. All you know is that I think the poster is like a porcelain
boy doll,
and there's like a picture of like an actual boy behind him.
This girl just answers an ad to go be a nanny at this big old mansion in England.
Sounds like The Turning, huh?
Right. And when she gets there, she discovers that there's no actual living boy at all. In fact, she's supposed to be a nanny for a fucking porcelain doll. I already have questions because like. Wouldn't you just turn around and walk out? You'd be like, I'm
oh,
sorry, I
and
can't.
And the people that she's watching for are, like, older, and they're
yes.
supposed to be going on holiday.
Yeah.
And, like, I would just have so many questions, but the way they're acting, everything, because essentially they are taking care of this porcelain doll as if it's their child.
Yeah, it's a doll.
And
it's
I get the
living.
Idea that they're trying, originally, like, the kid died in a fire, supposedly.
Yeah.
And they're thinking that this is their way of grieving. Fine, they kind of toy with that for a little while. And then things start happening. Like, okay, cool. Let's pick this up. So
Yep. The
family's on holiday. They commit suicide, as you do.
Yeah.
And then you're like, okay, something's going on.
Well,
is it a ritual? Is it this?
Well, and because the suicide thing happens, it made me think that maybe there was something, like, demonic or supernatural happening to them.
Again.
Through this porcelain doll. Because that's so severe, right? Like, if you're desperate enough that you're leaving the world that way... Right?
That you had no other way to do it.
Yeah, that you
or
had
they
no
got
other
into
way
a situation that they couldn't handle. I was thinking more paranormal. Again, this is the problem that we have with a lot of these movies is that when it's one way and we kind of come up with this really complex way that it should work out and they kind of like make this really just generic statement that covers it.
Yeah.
So then this haunting shit happens. You're like, okay, they're leading to haunting.
And the hauntings are actually pretty okay.
It's good.
Like
and then,
some of them are okay.
And it's not so much that like, this is one thing I wish Hollywood would get in their minds, is that you can be obvious, but add something that's different.
Yeah.
Like, just because you're telling a haunting story and it's making it a haunting story doesn't mean that you can't show things that are going to kind of change that a little bit. Like a ritual, like a weird kind of, like, passing of the torch type of idea. Kind of like Hereditary. Like,
yes.
The haunting things were real.
Yeah.
And it wasn't just like, oh, they're being haunted.
Right.
It was a ceremony. But they don't do that. This fucking, like, 25-year-old is just hiding in the house.
Yeah, so really, the boy, Brahms, that's his name, the parents think that he died, and here's the big twist. He didn't really die.
He's
just in the house.
He was, like, hiding behind the walls in the house
he's
and
the one
living
responsible.
Vicariously through a doll.
He is the one responsible for moving the doll in really creepy places so that people think that it's haunted or whatever. And really, it's not. It's just this 20-something-year-old guy. That's it.
Yep.
It's not good.
And just, like, kind of treats the parents like crap. So, it felt like such a cop-out. They kind of did everything so well up until that point. And then it's just like, well, then why bother? Like, if you were just going to have this guy kind of living there anyways, that could have been a much better story than to lead the entire audience on for majority of the movie thinking that there's some haunting here. there were so many better ways to do that. And then it just basically turned into a thriller, kind of like Antebellum.
Yeah.
It's like Antebellum and the dumpster fire of the turning. It was just not good. And how there's a sequel, I don't know.
So don't watch it.
The next one that we have, which we watched fairly recently, was The Dark and the Wicked.
Yeah.
So this is a fairly recent release. It's on Shudder. It just didn't do anything.
It almost made it into the meh category for me. But then when I really think about the ending and how dissatisfying it was,
it bumps it into the past
category.
So again, without getting into too many details, it's basically just like,
oh, that's your classic like demonic possession.
Classic demonic possession, but for no reason.
Yeah.
That's the main problem.
It was just kind of like,
happens to this family and shit goes on. Like the pros to it.
Mm-hmm.
There are some interesting things that happen. There are individual moments that are good, but the entire movie as a whole is kind of like...
It's not that good.
It's like family gets possessed for some reason.
Yeah.
People go crazy. They do crazy things. They die.
Right.
That's it.
Yep.
And it just kind of does it. Now, similar to Oculus, there's some cool like...
There's some good trickery moments.
Good trickery moments. There's some good like what the fuck moments.
That was the highlight of it for me. There's this one moment, we won't ruin it in case you do want to see it, but there is this one moment where the guy is tricked into thinking that his family is dead.
Yeah.
And that is really cool because he reacts for real to seeing that, but actually they weren't. They weren't dead.
It was just an illusion.
Yeah.
He was seeing things.
I do like that one particular scene, but that one scene can't make up for that whole movie. It was so slow otherwise.
Well, and on that, it's just like, they get haunted. It gets worse. And then it almost took like a M. Night Shyamalan The Happening moment at the end there, where like now just everyone's like stabbing knitting needles in their eyes.
Yeah, I didn't like it.
No.
I didn't like it.
It's gory.
Yeah.
So if you're into those kind of weird, gory movies, maybe you'd like it.
Yeah.
But you can pass it.
But I don't know. I think there's even better gore out there.
There are.
Yeah.
Just don't watch it.
Yeah.
The next one that we have is Winchester, which I have not actually seen.
Yeah.
I'm taking our own advice on this one.
Don't even bother with Winchester. It's really unfortunate because the true story of the heir to the Winchester fortune is an interesting story. So if you guys don't know this, I first heard this story when I was listening to one of my favorite podcasts, which is a podcast called Lore. And in that, the host of the show is, his name is Aaron Mankey. And he used to do, I think he used to do like NPR years ago. Anywho, so his Lore podcast like went into like all the detail about this Winchester woman. Essentially, she is the heiress to the Winchester gun fortune. It's exactly what you think it is. Now, because those guns are basically used to kill people, she felt that she was A, not deserving of that type of fortune because literally the product that they sold only brought like pain and killing and hurt. And also that she thought that she was being haunted by spirits who were killed by the Winchester guns. Now, this is a literal true story. Like, this, the actual woman thought this.
Yeah.
She originally lived somewhere on the East Coast. I want to say it was Massachusetts, but I could be entirely wrong.
I mean, all terrible hauntings happen in Massachusetts.
That's where all the witches live. Right? And then she travels all the way westbound because she gets it in her head that she has to do this thing. She has to move away from the area. And when she is somewhere in her middle age, she moves all the way to the West Coast and she makes it to... It's either San Diego or San Francisco, and now I can't remember. Anyway, it's in California. She makes it all the way to California, and she starts building the most elaborate mansion that one has ever seen.
Yeah.
But the purpose for the building is what is so interesting behind her true story. So her house, her real actual house, you can actually go there and visit it. You can physically see her old house. It didn't make any sense. So...
Oh, she did this whole thing to be like, I'm doing this weird shit to like trick ghosts?
To trick ghosts and to capture ghosts who were some ghosts. Because basically she was like, some ghosts are good and some ghosts are bad and some are very vengeful. Just like regular people, because that's all they are, is just regular people. And essentially, she would do this weird thing where when a new ghost would come to haunt her, she would build an extension onto the Winchester mansion. But it wouldn't be like a normal, it wouldn't just be like, oh, I just, you know, I made a room, a solarium with, you know, a door and you walk in it like a normal thing. It's like there were staircases to nowhere and there were corners that led to not like the right ends, room. Yeah. And there were slants where there shouldn't be, but still like with good craftsmanship, if that makes any kind of sense. Yeah. Very interesting concept. So when this movie came out, I was like, oh, I'm definitely seeing this movie, having heard, you know, the true story of this woman. Mm-hmm. Oh my God. The movie is so boring. Like, it is so boring. And the scares are non-existent. They're just like, it's like kind of cheesy, kind of weak, meh. But what is even more disappointing, and kind of similar to The Turning, is that they had a massive budget.
Yeah.
Good acting. And they had their true story to go off of.
Yeah, they had everything. They had the recipe there. Yeah,
you had the recipe. You didn't even need to change much. The source material is there. It's a real thing that she did. Now, you could have taken the movie in a different direction and said, like, and left it a mystery. You know, you didn't know about the, you're leaving it open for interpretation, like, were there ghosts, were there not ghosts? You didn't even need to answer that question. But, like, they could have just focused more about her, but really it wasn't. It was about these, like, cheesy ghosts. And then they came, at the end, there's a literal, like, gun scene. There's, okay, like, a shootout with ghosts.
Oh, exciting.
Yeah. That's what I'm saying. It is not good. Like, it, don't even bother seeing it. And if you really want to read about the whole, like, Winchester story, like, you can read about it online. And you can, like I said, Lore has an excellent podcast episode on it. There's some really cool, interesting facts. But, oh my God, the movie, just keep walking.
Yeah, just pass it to the side.
Yeah.
Next one we have here is I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House.
Yeah.
I have not seen it.
It's not worth seeing. Don't even bother. It's so boring. And the only reason that I want you to watch this, the only reason I'm going to say go against my recommendation of not watching it.
Just me or the listeners?
Just you.
Ugh, why do I get targeted?
I know. Is that I want you to watch it because maybe I'm just a dum-dum and I missed the point of this movie. But like, I don't like this movie. I'm gonna add one here, right here under this exact same category of it confuses the hell out of me, is The Witch.
Yeah.
We've talked about it before.
It's also in our category of like, really? This was award winning?
Yeah.
You can barely hear the fucking thing. It's in old English. There's so much muttering, and then the storyline's just meh.
Yeah, it's
they think
it's
she's fine. A witch, and then she isn't, but then she is.
But then she actually is, and you're like, oh, okay. And anyway, so this particular movie falls under that category for me. Yeah. I'm the Pretty Thing That Lives in the House. First of all, what the fuck kind of title is that? Stupidest title I've ever read in my whole life. And the story is like, I don't know. I think the point is that she ends up being the ghost. And I'm like, yeah, but other movies did that better, like The Others.
Yeah.
That's a far better movie.
It is, yeah.
And it's like, well, so you're not even doing something original? Anyway, I need you to watch this dumpster fire because I need you to tell me if it is as bad as I think it is. Because heads up for anybody listening, I did make him and my best friend watch The Witch to make sure that I wasn't crazy because I hated it. And I was like, no. This won awards, and people rave about it. It's got like a 98%.
You even watched the edited version that had the intro scene, which apparently never was in there. Anyways.
Exactly. So I'm like,
whole thing.
Right. So I'm like, I need someone to watch this because maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm just missing the point and I'm just not seeing it or whatever. No. It was as bad as I thought it was.
Yeah. So we're going to jump back again to the Stephen King thing. Remember how we said that we had some Stephen King things that you can watch? Mm-hmm. Here's one you don't have to. It Chapter 2. This may be, aside from The Turning, but I mean, I can't keep claiming the turning is the worst, because that's just not fair, the turning.
I think if you want to take the turning out of it, this is probably your most hated movie on this list. This is probably
my most hated movies on the list.
Yeah.
Because they, it's not even a comparison if they did the first one so well. It was, so I really liked the first one because of the way that they ended up doing it. So, for those who are unfamiliar with the It story, just very quickly, the book is done in a way where you essentially, the story is kind of told by flashbacks.
Yeah.
They kind of start, so if you're putting it in terms of these movies, technically the original It story starts at It Chapter 2,
mm-hmm.
but recounts everything in It Chapter 2 with everything in It Chapter 1,
mm-hmm.
kind of happening all in normal...
Via flashbacks. And this was the downfall to the original series. Like, the original It series, the one that came out in,
and they also cast Tim Curry. I mean, you've already heard the sound clips of it.
Oh my god! His laugh is the funniest. Like, it's ridiculous. And he's a delight to watch. But
it's not scary.
He's not scary. It's just that scary.
So what I liked with the way that they did the remake is It Chapter 1 was basically told as the flashbacks only. Like, it's not them as adults recounting it. It's just them as kids. Which, in my mind, thought, okay, if they're breaking it into two chapters, basically it's going to be them as kids. And them as adults.
That's what I thought was so genius about the remake. I thought that they were going to take the downfalls of the original series, which was that everything was told through flashback. And so, of course, it made it like 1,000 hours long.
And the first movie was great because they did a really good job of the Pennywise makeup. I think that was good. There's a lot of really creepy things in the house. We actually got to see it in Toronto. The It House is in Toronto.
Yeah. So they updated Pennywise. They gave him a different look. The actor is really, really fantastic. And the kid actors are so good.
They're all really good.
I usually love to trash on kid actors for anybody who knows
they
me.
They could go into the story. They didn't have to worry about doing the weird flashback where you're missing gaps. Like, they could just tell the story in chronological order, and they did a really good job with it.
And that's what I thought was so genius about it, because I thought that It Chapter 2 was just going to be told from the adult perspective. No flashback necessary.
Like, it's
going
to be starting basically where the original story started, but it's going to be
without the shitty flashbacks.
Without the shitty flashbacks, but...
Yeah. No, but then they still had flashbacks!
So, they didn't lose me at the flashbacks.
No. They kind of lost me at the flashbacks, I'm not going
to
lie.
But not that bad. They went to the Mandarin.
You called out the Mandarin in Toronto.
Sorry, I really, just a quick aside here. I was like, I saw it, I'm like, I've been there. Like, that's the Mandarin. Anyways, so if you're a Toronto fan, that's one of the Mandarin locations. I can't remember specifically which one, but they're all kind of the same. But yeah, they go to a Chinese restaurant, and it's the Mandarin. But the problem is that they start retelling more flashbacks, that didn't happen in the first movie.
Yeah.
And you're like, okay, but if these things happened to you in the past, why didn't we see it? Like, it would have been, but then they spent so that's problem number one. They spent about half the movie retelling flashbacks
and it's long.
You should have already seen.
Yeah, but you didn't
But you didn't. You're like, okay, fine, that's problem number one. But then Pennywise gets
silly. Yeah, Pennywise is flat out silly.
Like, it's kind of, they do a couple things that are kind of creepy and scary, but then it just basically becomes the Tim Curry version.
Yeah.
And especially because it already has the super cheesy Stephen King ending where, they have to make fun of the clown to overcome it.
Which I don't like. And I never liked the ending
I never
anyway.
Liked that ending. And on top of it, it's so childish.
Yeah, it gets really childish.
Which just doesn't make any sense to me because this is supposed to be the point where they're adults.
Yeah.
And it's like,
it's funny because the child movie was...
you're a disgrace. You're stupid. And it's like, what adult is calling another adult? Like,
it's like, you're a poo-poo butt. And you're just like, oh, really? Like,
what adult has ever called that type of thing that?
Yeah, exactly. And it's funny because the kiddie version, It Chapter 1, is scarier than the adult version. It's almost like they did a weird swap.
Backwards.
And they try to do this whole shot-for-shot remake thing. And I'm
sorry,
but I think
that led to its downfall.
The original was so garbage. Why are you trying to do a shot-for-shot remake?
Well,
just scrap it.
I mean, it's
because
they had the cameo from Stephen King. He kind of was like, no, you should do it this way.
But oh my god, just scrap it. Do something different. You did your whole different thing with It Chapter 1. You could have done something completely different with It Chapter 2.
Like, and the way I feel about it is I enjoy it only as a standalone. I don't even count the second one in there.
No.
I would rather, honestly, preferably just have Pennywise keep going. Right. Like, if they made 1,000 remakes of it with, like, different iterations of what happened. Iterations?
Iterations,
I would enjoy that much more, but it's just, they had so much potential, and they just lost me.
Oh, they shit the bed on
because
it.
They just, it just didn't work. Didn't work. No. So, don't watch it. Watch the first one. It's good. Just skip the second one, unless you're a diehard It Stephen King fan.
But
even still.
Yeah, but go into it, like, knowing that it's...
It's basically going to be like watching the Tim Curry version without Tim Curry and attempting to be scary, but it's not.
Yeah, it's silly. It's childish.
That's why it's probably on one of my top hated lists, aside from The Turning, because The Turning is just always
going to
be...
It's just forever going to be at the top hated list.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm going to get to my most hateds on our list.
Oh, and just very quickly, the last two that we have here, The Cloverfield Paradox, which... Don't even bother.
No, it's another one that's like, don't even bother. So I liked Cloverfield. Now, I know that that's not everybody's cup of tea because the whole shaky personal camera thing kind of makes people feel sick. I don't get that way, so I liked it. I like Cloverfield.
And then even the 10 Cloverfield Lane, I have to talk about it. I did work on that part of that movie.
Yeah.
It has some good moments. It's got some good psychological thriller moments.
It does. I don't love it as much as Cloverfield, but I still think it's a good movie. The Cloverfield Paradox. Oh,
it just got... It kind of took the worst of all of them.
It did. And it
just hit all the wrong things. Like, it really did not need to exist.
They could have tied this whole thing up really nicely and made them all... It could have made it all connected, and it could have been really interesting. But, like, instead, it was... And it was boring.
It was not
boring.
Good.
Don't watch it. Don't bother. If you like Cloverfield, cool.
Watch
awesome.
Cloverfield.
Just watch
maybe
Cloverfield.
Watch 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Maybe watch 10 Cloverfield Lane. Don't bother. Skip Paradox. It's
not worth it.
Not worth it. Okay. This is my most hated one on the list. I'm going to talk about this one.
Yeah.
You haven't seen it, and I'm sorry. You're gonna. You're
maybe
gonna
watch
have.
Two terrible movies.
Oh, yeah.
Ugh.
I hate this movie. I'm going to. I hate this movie.
Like Turning hate or normal hate?
Way more than Turning. I hate this movie more than The Turning.
Wow, that's a lot.
The movie that I'm talking about is Mother. Where do I even begin?
Like, you wouldn't even pass it. You would just, like, pass it into, like, the flames of hell.
Well, and it's good biblical reference, by the way, because... So, for anybody who hasn't seen this movie, it's funny because it... I don't find it to be a horror movie. It's not a horror movie. However, it does make it to a lot of horror movie lists.
Yeah.
And that's why I'm talking about it. First of all, I fucking hate that it makes it to horror movie lists because it is not good and it's not scary. But all it is a giant biblical metaphor. And I don't mean biblical as in like, oh, it's a massive metaphor. I mean, literally, it's a metaphor for stories from the Bible. That's it.
That's it.
Okay. So the main star, which is Jennifer Lawrence, she is the mother character. Essentially, what Jennifer Lawrence is Mother Nature. Okay?
Great title.
Right. And what's his face? I'm blanking on his name. Javier Bardem.
Mm-hmm.
He is God, or he is representing God.
Okay.
And they live in a house together, and it opens in a really strange way. Like, it opens with almost like a phoenix rising from the ashes situation. Like, there's a big fire, and then everything goes to ashes, and then everything is born anew again, and you're like, okay. So it starts with some fuckery, okay?
Yeah.
It starts with some real fuckery. And then... You get introduced to your two main characters, and they essentially live in this very isolated house. But the house is just supposed to represent, I think, Earth? I'm not really sure. I think Earth. Or the Garden of Eden. No, I think that's what it is. It's the Garden of Eden.
You've already lost me.
Right. So, then there's some weirdness, because they're not telling it in the way that makes it that obvious, but they're telling it in the way that you're like, wait a second, this is a Bible story. So then Michelle Pfeiffer's character shows up, and man, for the life of me, I can't remember who she's with, but her husband essentially. And they have two sons, okay, two adult sons, and they show up by themselves as a couple first, and they're uninvited, all right? So they just show up, and Jennifer Lawrence's character, the mother, is basically like, who are you? What are you doing here? And she's very confused, and she doesn't know who they are. But the God character, or you don't know it, but the guy, Javier Bardem, he just invites them in. And mother character is basically like, okay, and you can tell she feels like steamrolled and she feels kind of crappy about it, but you don't know why. You don't even know what the connection is, and you're still thinking that this might be a modern story. Like, everything is happening in modern times. Like, they have electricity and, you know what I mean? Yeah. It's not set in some kind of a biblical, like, timeline, so it's hard to piece together. Then the guy gets... They're kind of, like, ungrateful house guests. The guy gets, like, wasted drunk, and he has to go lay down, and... I don't know, mother character has conflict with God character because she basically feels like everybody is taking advantage of her. Which, sure, you can say, like, for a metaphor of life, if you believe in that, you know, mother nature would probably feel pretty taken advantage of by the way that we treat them, right? So then as stuff progresses, then you find out that the two sons get involved. And essentially, I believe that they're supposed to represent Cain and Abel from the Bible.
You're talking to the wrong person.
Oh, yeah. So they're supposed to represent Cain and Abel, I'm pretty sure. And then there's this whole, like, party scene, and I'm not even remotely sure what that's supposed to represent now, because it's been some years since I watched it. And then the mother character, she's pregnant, by the way, that's basically pregnant most of the story. Not the whole story, but most of the story she's pregnant. She finally gives birth, and I think that's supposed to represent Jesus. I'm pretty sure. And the horde of people that are sort of like living and partying in their house try to consume him, which is, I think, supposed to be a representation of on how people like consume religion and how people claim to like own Jesus even though they're assholes. You know what I mean? How like general people are assholes.
Yeah.
The people in the party, the group of massive people, they're depicted as shitheads. They're depicted as like really crappy people.
Yeah.
But yet they feel that they're entitled to this like little baby Jesus kind of thing.
Yeah.
They're not, it's trust me, the movie is not that overt also. Like, I am describing it in ways that are way more overt. It's really hard to figure out if you have no knowledge of the Bible.
Yeah, which I don't. I mean, I know there's a couple stories. I know Jesus was born on a day.
I know, but you wouldn't...
And then he died on a day.
Right. But what I'm saying is, like, if you didn't know that, even going into the movie, or if you didn't know that because somebody told you, like me, like somebody like me likes to ruin it.
Or that was my job.
Or even, like, I don't know, like me, I grew up, like... knowing stories from the Bible. My parents, you know, especially at a certain time, were certainly more religious, and they definitely have a faith in things. And so, yeah, for me, it was a little bit easier to, like, pick out some of those stories. But other than that, it was okay. I won't even get into the ending because I can't even explain it. It's a weird mess of basically the world kind of consumes Mother Earth, right? Or Mother Nature or whatever. She ends up getting consumed. Which I'm like, yeah, like, social commentary, blah, blah, blah. So, it's so artsy-fartsy. Like, it's beyond artsy-fartsy. It's not even entertaining anymore. Because it's just so, like, in your face about, like, this is our message, and, like, you have to understand our message, and know the message, and we're talking about the Bible, and we're talking about God, and we're talking about...
Did you just turn into John Mulaney right now?
Well, it's like that, though. It's so, like, it's so in your face with it, but also at the same time, the way that the metaphors are depicted are also kind of not in your face, and they're almost like, oh, do you see how clever we're being with these veiled, you know... metaphors that we're showing you on screen. It's like, no, you're as like subtle as like a fucking jackhammer. But they, I think they think that they're really subtle. I think they think the movie is super important, but it doesn't say anything. There's no message. What's the message? There is none. It's useless. It's entirely useless. And this is like coming, I think that somebody who is religious might think that this is useless, and I think that somebody who is not religious would think this is useless, and yet somehow the thing gets, like, praised for being this, like, oh, clever, groundbreaking movie. I hate it. I hate it so much. It's, and again, I can only imagine how confused people would be if you don't have that much knowledge of, like, random Bible stories. Especially Old Testament Bible stories. It's not...
I don't know, there's like four Testament. I don't even know. there's like a book, and there's like a new book. And...
There's the Old Testament and the New Testament. That's, you know, if you're talking about like general like Christianity. But there's also other books depending on your religion too. But anyway, I...
There's the Book of Mormon. They wrote a musical about it.
Yeah, that one's far more entertaining. I just think like if you're going to have a movie that is this like veiled and this... metaphorical, you have to make it so that, like, your general mass of audience could have even their own interpretation of it or understand what your original interpretation was meant to be, right? But yeah. It's almost, like, too abstract, but then also at the same time,
it's too abstract while hitting it too on the head.
Yeah, it's so strange. I don't even know how it's possible. I can't stand it. I hate it.
Just pass to the side.
Yeah.
And with that, we're going to move all the terrible movies, and we're going to pass them to the side, and we're going to give you guys just a quick little, some tidbits of information of some movies that we are looking forward to.
Yeah.
Thankfully, now with some COVID-19 restrictions lifting up, there are some new productions starting to kind of get underway. So hopefully by the time that we're allowed to, you know, go outside and see one other person, we can maybe actually watch a movie.
Yeah, and here in the GTA area... For anybody who's actually in this local area, I did happen to see that they're opening up drive-ins again.
Yes, now, you do technically have to leave the GTA, and I know that is frowned upon.
Now, we're not going to be doing that yet until it's kind of more acceptable for... We live right in Toronto, for people who don't know or know. We live right in Toronto, and we are still very much under...
Under current stay-at-home orders, not even in what they call the returning to restart framework, whatever the hell it's called.
So, like, we're still in a stay-at-home order, and the next category that we're going to be moved into is still likely a lockdown quote, which is
in the framework, but it's still a lockdown. In the
framework. So we're not going to be doing that, but we are kind of looking forward to, like, maybe in a couple of weeks, we might be able to go to a drive-in.
Yes.
Yeah.
And some of these things are Netflix stuff, so that's hopefully something that will eventually come out at some point straight to our home.
Right.
So the first, and I would argue the biggest thing we're looking forward to, is the Conjuring 3 movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Devil Made Me Do It. This is the whole look and movie about the Amityville horror case.
Yeah, and this is supposed to wrap up everything within the Conjuring universe.
Yeah, so it's going to be a whole tie-in. Mm-hmm. It's good timing that we're actually doing this for our podcast. By the time we come around to that, it's supposed to be coming out summer this year of 2021. Right? Maybe it'll all line up for you guys and you get first-hand, you know, idea of what's going on.
Mm-hmm.
The next one we're interested in is Quiet Place 2.
Yeah.
Sequel again on the original Quiet Place. I'm interested. I don't have necessarily the highest hopes.
But I want to see it.
But I do want to see it, because I want to see what they're going to do differently, or is it going to be kind of more of the same?
Yeah, I'm leaving the possibility open for, like, we might be disappointed
if it ends up
being, like, much of the same.
Yes.
But I'm hopeful that it's going to be, like,
even from the trailers,
it
looks like there's an interesting, like, sideline, so we'll see what happens.
Exactly.
The next one, which I think was one you're more interested in, is the Ghostbusters Afterlife movie.
Yes, so this is...
It's not really a full horror.
No, this is certainly not a horror movie, but I think it's you know, gonna be family-friendly horror, right?
Yeah.
I think the premise is really cool. Definitely check out the trailers that are out now. I think it looks, I don't know, I think it looks like it's gonna be good.
Yeah, so the next one that I have is a new James Wan movie.
Mm-hmm.
I don't really have much info on it, aside from that it is a James Wan directed screenplay, story, and produced by, all-encompassing, and it's called Malignant. That's all I got.
Mm-hmm.
It is basically, it was supposed to be coming out this past summer in August, and it's coming out this coming summer, possibly August, September. They haven't really released an official new release date, for North America at least, but interesting to see, because James Wan did the entire Conjuring universe. It'll be interesting to see how his stuff does outside of that.
Yes.
Especially his own writing, his own screenplay, everything. Definitely. So we're really looking forward to that, kind of going to see what's that is all about.
I'm just hoping, fingers crossed, that it's not cheesy. That's
right,
my
that's
thing.
What I'm worried about, too.
Yeah.
Or that he kind of holds on and does the same thing as he did in the in the Conjuring universe.
Yeah.
So the next one we have is actually Guillermo del Toro.
Yes.
This is a new one from him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's called Antlers.
Yeah.
So not really too much given to on it. There is a trailer about it, and it's kind of like a mystery horror. They're trying to kind of figure out what's going on. Basically, it's like mythical creatures or some sort of like escape with it. So it's interesting, and we're going to kind of see how that goes, especially with Guillermo del Toro working on that movie.
Yeah, the trailer looks intriguing enough to me that I think we'll see that.
Yeah.
Now, the one that I'm really, really looking forward to, and I don't have a lot of information on when it's supposed to be released. It originally was supposed to be released maybe late 2021, but I know that the pandemic pushed everything back. I'll just talk about it briefly. So it's supposed to be titled Bo is Afraid, and it is a new Ari Aster movie. Yeah, I know, we have an Ari Aster love affair going on.
Yeah.
But essentially, it is based on a character named Bo, which was a character in one of Ari Aster's short films from over 10 years ago. That's actually how he got his start. So Hereditary was legitimately his first feature film, which I know that's pretty fucking impressive considering that's your first, like, full-length film.
Mm-hmm.
And before that, all he had really done was short films. And this character, Bo, is from one of the short films. It is rumored that Joaquin Phoenix is supposed to play Bo, which I think is a really fantastic choice. Joaquin Phoenix, I know that he had that time period there where he was, like, just really strange. He was doing that weird social experiment.
Yeah.
But other than that time period, I do think his acting is phenomenal.
Yeah.
Like, I do think he is great. So I think if that's the choice for the main character, Bo, I think we're off to a good start. I'll say that. Aside from that, I don't know anything more about what the premise is.
Yeah,
but I have heard that the scares are supposed to be cranked up to, like, 100. Even if you're comparing it to Hereditary or Midsommar. That was his thing. He wanted it to be even more terrifying than that.
So,
which I'm like, I'm not really sure where you go from there, but...
Well, I'm sure we'll find out, and if it is as good as he claims it is, you guys will be the first to know from us.
Exactly. Now, the last one on our list is more of a fun...
It's more of a fun, getting us into the summertime. It'd be interesting to see, you know, how scary or how kooky it is.
Yeah.
But this is based off of the R.L. Stein series, Fear Street.
Yes.
So, Netflix is actually starting this summer 2021. They're doing kind of like a big Netflix event, kind of in the COVID bubble and COVID environment that we're in. They're actually doing kind of like a virtual release event for the series called Fear Street. And they're going to be essentially three movies that are related but ultimately independent of each other, but all based around R.L. Stein's Fear Street collections.
Yeah.
So it's going to be three different movies through Netflix, and rumor has it they're going to be, I have a feeling they're going to be kind of along the lines of, you know, Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark.
Yes, and Goosebumps-esque.
Goosebumps-esque, where it's still going to be, again, it's going to be horror, quote, but it's going to be, like, family horror, where and, it's not going to be full, like, gore or anything like that. But
and maybe, like, older kid-friendly. Maybe your tweens and teens could watch this. I think it's definitely worth a look. I mean, I'm depending on how the first one is, I might not watch the entire series, but I am intrigued from the way that it's being marketed.
Yes, way it's marketed, and just kind of how quickly it's coming up. Like, it's already supposed to be coming up, I think, June or July of 2021, so...
Because, guys, can you believe it? It is March.
It's March, and we're almost, like approaching the second week.
Yeah. It's March.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Perfect.
It's crazy.
Summertime.
Can't believe we've hit a whole year of this pandemic stuff.
Yeah, we have been laid off for a whole year.
Woo!
Yay! Cries. Insert cries.
Cries. Insert cries here.
That should be a real horror movie. I mean, we should just take our lives, turn it into a horror movie, we'd be rich.
It's just called The Aviation Industry. What used to be.
It's been dead for a really long time.
Like a year.
Anyways. So we hope you enjoyed our list on our kind of like our tops, our bottoms, our yas, queen, and our
pass.
And just some stuff that maybe is a little more interesting to you or kind of even a bit of insight to us about what we like. Hopefully it's the same stuff you like, which is why you listen to us.
Yeah, and we just really like giving, you know, recommendations. And also, of course, we just love trashing on really bad movies every once in a while. Yeah.
So we are for real. For realsies this time.
For realsies.
Going to continue with the Conjuring universe next time. And yes. Our next review is going to be on Annabelle Creation.
Yeah.
So thanks again so much for listening to us here on
Dark Room Reviews.